You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
We've named this area's favorite river after the English explorer who sailed most of its length 400 years ago. What most people don't know is the shocking story of what happened to Henry Hudson the following year. And that's told by Peter C. Mankell, who is a professor of history and anthropology at the University of Southern California and director of the USC Huntington Early Modern Studies Institute, in a new book called Fatal Journey, The Final Expedition of Henry Hudson. It's published by Basic Books. And Peter, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
From the title, we can assume that the expedition at the heart of your book didn't turn out all that well for Henry Hudson.
Yes, I think that's exactly right. That actually is a quotation from one of the earliest people who wrote about what happened to Hudson. It was Hudson's last and fatal journey, unlike his others, which he came home from.
Now, he had sailed here a number of times in different ships. The one we are most familiar with is the Half Moon, the one that he took up the what was not then called the Hudson River.
Exactly. Hudson made journeys every year from 1607 to 1610. His goal was always the same. He wanted to find the quickest way from England to the great spice markets of the Southwest Pacific, the Spice Islands.
So the same thing that drove Christopher Columbus to come
exactly
here.
Exactly the same, but they went different ways. Hudson looked at a map and thought, I should go north. So in 1607, he went straight north, thinking he could get across the North Pole. That didn't work. He came home. 1608, he thought he'd go north of Russia through the Northeast Passage. That didn't work, so he came home. 1609, then working for the Dutch, he tries again for the Northeast Passage. Doesn't work. They have a debate on the ship, which way should we go? Some guys say, let's go to sort of northern Canadian waters, what we now know as Canadian waters. And Hudson said, well, my friend Captain John Smith, famous from Jamestown, said that the Indians there told me that just north of us, there's a passageway through to a big body of water in the west. So Hudson said, well, let's go look for that. So he comes over, and then that's in the Half Moon, and he sails up to what is now New York.
But then the Indians had told him the truth. If you go north, you can go into what is the St. Lawrence Seaway. And as I understand it from another writer, the Basque may very well have been fishing in there way before Columbus ever ventured into the Americas.
Well, there are certainly Basque and other Europeans fishing there, but the sailors of Europe, late medieval period, were very secretive about where they were getting their fish. So we don't actually have a lot of documentation about where they were actually bringing these fish from.
Who was paying for these voyages? They couldn't have been inexpensive.
No, they were seriously expensive. Hudson was always backed by private financiers, and that private financiers sponsored most of at least the English voyages and the Dutch voyages that went across the Atlantic looking for new commercial opportunities.
His first voyages on the Hopewell didn't reach the Indies and any new access to the spice trade. Were they considered failures by Hudson?
Well, Hudson was probably disappointed that he didn't get over to the Spice Islands, but, and this is what his backers would have liked, he came home, and he came home with his crew alive and his ship intact. So in that sense, he built their confidence for later investments, and so they invested in them again the next year and then came back in 1610. And it was that same success that led the Dutch East India Company to support him in 1609.
And we're talking about ships that could be quite large investments, the East India Company ones especially. You write that some held on board theatrical productions of Richard II and Hamlet.
Isn't that a wonderful idea? Alas, those ships were much bigger than the ones that Hudson was ever on. So he never got to share in those pleasures.
Now, were any of these things successes in other ways? Obviously, going up toward Albany is interesting, but did he come back with anything?
Well, in some sense, every expedition that went and survived where people came back was a success because it brought Europeans new knowledge about the Western Hemisphere. It brought them into contact with new indigenous peoples who they could trade with. It allowed them to sort of map where resources might be found, including what Hudson and others did for the Arctic. So they were successful. They just failed at their primary objective at finding a way over to the Spice Islands.
Didn't he bring his son along on some of these voyages?
He did. His son went with them on every voyage. It's hard to know how common it was. There are ships' boys on all of these ships. It's hard to know how common it was for a ship master to bring his own son. But Hudson brought his son when he was 14, again when he was 15, 16, and then the last journey when his son was 17.
So that must have added to his reputation as a captain who knew what he was doing.
I think he had a reputation of a captain who knew how to take care of his crew also. And now that certainly comes through in the accounts of his first three voyages.
And, of course, it doesn't come through in the last one.
No, it doesn't.
When he departed on this final voyage in the the Discovery. It wasn't the
Discovery,
Half Moon.
Correct.
How many men were with him?
At the very beginning, there were 22 men and two boys on the ship, including Hudson himself.
Were they prepared for the harsh climate of the Arctic Circle? Because that's where they were going.
We know that Hudson had been in the North before, and we know that his son had been with him. And we know that one of the men had been with him on the trip to New York, what's now New York, the previous year. We don't know a lot of documentation for the others. We think that at least a couple of them probably were previous crewmen. But it's unclear how much experience they had. And in London at the time, there were a lot of sort of underemployed men who would basically take up a berth on any ship and go out to sea and work. So we don't know if these are the first time they worked for him or multiple times.
On his Half Moon voyage, he and his crew encountered natives.
Yes,
native
indeed.
Groups. Did this happen when they went further north?
The funny thing is that if it had happened more frequently, Hudson would have had a better chance of surviving. On the journey of 1610, they do run into Inuit. And then during this winter or the spring of 1611, by that point, Hudson does meet a Cree man. And he hopes that these are the people who live in southern James Bay. He hoped that contact with them would allow him to provision his ship and go on sailing the next year. But in fact, the Cree man never comes back again, and so Hudson loses the contact.
Were they aware that they were going to have to contend with ice and colder and colder temperatures?
Well, Hudson was certainly aware of it, although I speculate in the book that the reason Hudson sails to the south when it's clear that he's not going to make it back to London that year is he's looking for a warmer climate. And in fact, he gets down to about latitude 52 degrees north, which is the same as London. But what he didn't anticipate were the winds, these Arctic winds that made James Bay fundamentally different than any place he'd been.
What impact did that have on the morale of his crew?
Well, we have this sort of silence in the records, which is somewhat frustrating. Hudson's records, Hudson's journal of the voyage, parts of it were destroyed by those who came back. So who knows what Hudson—
To protect themselves, destroying evidence.
Presumably to protect themselves. But we know from another English commander who went to the same area 20 years later that those months of winter from November to June were just brutal, that human skin freezes when people went outside, that their eyes would freeze, that they would trim their beard so the hair wouldn't freeze and pull off skin with it. There were all sorts of accidents that could happen to people. They could fall into snowdrifts and never be seen again.
Did they have warm clothing?
They had clothing that was probably sufficient for being on a ship with the idea that they would be there for a certain number of months and then back in warmer climates. I don't think that they were probably as well equipped for an Arctic winter as they might have been.
My guest is Peter C. Mankell. His book, Fatal Journey, The Final Expedition of Henry Hudson, it is published by Basic Books. A key figure in this story is a man named Henry Green, a friend of Henry Hudson.
Or a former servant of Henry Hudson, in which the relationship is fascinating. Hudson seems to be doing Green this favor by bringing along this man who then, according to the surviving document by this man named Abacuc Prickett, Green becomes the prime mutineer who turns against Hudson.
Now, what precipitated the mutiny?
Well, according to Prickett, what precipitated it was that there were some men who had become either ill or somehow infirm. And the men who were healthy didn't want to share the remaining food with them. They thought these men were going to die. Let's just cut off the food, and that's more for us to go back.
So they claimed that Henry Hudson was hiding food from everyone else?
Then once they decided, well, Hudson was very fair. Hudson wanted to give food to these men. And so then the men started to search the ship. And in that process, they claimed they found food that Hudson had squirreled away. Then they lost faith in Hudson and decided they needed to get rid of him.
Well, what are the sources for what we know?
That's a really great question. The prime source for what we know is a narrative written by this man named Abacuc Prickett. The manuscript itself doesn't survive, but it's printed in 1625. In addition to that narrative, which tells the whole story, when the Discovery got back to London in 1611, the eight survivors, the ones who made it back, went in front of a board known as the Masters of Trinity House and gave depositions about what happened. And then 5 years later, half a dozen of those men, or four of those men in the end, were eventually charged with murdering Henry Hudson, and we have the depositions from that trial. So the main pieces of evidence are these two series of depositions, plus Prickett's narrative, and then other narratives which followed.
So this was a big story in England.
That's an excellent question. It was an important story in England. It was certainly known by all of the people in the merchant community. The High Court of Admiralty, years after it happened, decided it has to come in and render a final verdict on it, presumably because the lingering mystery was bad for business.
Now, they must have known, the mutineers, that they would face prosecution if they returned home. That's the reason that the mutineers on the Bounty didn't go home.
Right. And that's why there's this brilliant moment in Prickett's narrative where he says that Green and one of Hudson's other men named Robert Jewett or Jouet said, well, you know, we would be hanged if we go home, except if we prove that Hudson was not doing the right thing for the ship and for the crew. And if we prove that he was incompetent, maybe we can save ourselves.
And then Green and some of the other mutineers died on the way home, so they could blame it all on the dead ones?
That is exactly right. So as Hudson and his son and six other men sail away in a little shallop, or paddle away in a little shallop, the survivors are going up the east coast of Hudson's Bay. They see a group of Inuit on the shore. They wave to each other. The guys on the ship think, we can trade with them. Five of them go to the shore. The Inuit turn on them. They mortally wound them. The wounding is crucial because they get back and they bleed to death on the boat because they have to explain the bloodstains going across the Atlantic. Another man dies. They get back to London. We didn't do it.
Meanwhile, unlike Captain Bligh, Henry Hudson disappears.
He disappears. Exactly.
Does anybody have any idea what happened?
Well, people have been speculating about it for a long time. And even in the 17th century, and this is what I sort of bring out in the book, even the 17th century, when James is there in the 1630s, he sees a couple of sharpened stakes in the ground that he wonders maybe these were left by Hudson. And then in 1671, a man named Thomas Gorst is in the exact same area, overwinters, as far as we know, the same area, had spent the winter with Cree Indians, so he knows what their houses look like. He goes exploring right before they're about to go back, sees something, and he says, a wigwam not of the Indian construction. This must be where Hudson died. Unfortunately, Gorst didn't say exactly where that was, so we've never found it.
Well, a number of possibilities, obviously. He could have just died at sea. After all, he was in a little boat, and it was very cold, and they were exposed, and the ocean can get rather rough.
It's possible, although he is cut off. It's in June that they're cut off, so he wouldn't have died at – well, he might have died at sea then, although they're within sight of land. It is possible he tried to sail home again. That would have been a difficult venture. I mean, there are people now who say, well, you can make it in a shallop of the size that they were in. That's theoretically true, but when some of Frobisher's men in the 1570s tried it, they disappeared in the sea. I think it more likely that Hudson set up camp and figured a ship would come by to save him.
Did others continue to look for a Northwest Passage?
Yeah, for the next 5 years, the English continue to send ships, and the most famous explorer that comes out of that is William Baffin.
And they named Baffin Bay
is after exactly him. After these expeditions.
And is he the one who figured out you can't do it? Although now it's possible that we will be able to
now
do
because
it
because of global warming. Yes, it's sort of one of those ironies of history.
So that's because ice was really the major impediment. There is a Northwest Passage,
There's theoretically a way through, but not in the kind of ship that Hudson had, at least not in the 17th century, in the kind of ship that Hudson was sailing.
Although I'm not sure I like the idea of a Northwest Passage if we have to pay the price that we're paying.
I would agree with you entirely.
Meanwhile, this is probably the best we can ever find out about Henry Hudson.
I hope so.
Still, we have the river. I'm very pleased. I want to know who Mr. East is because that's an interesting river, too.
I can't help you on that one.
Peter C. Mancall, Mancall. His book, and it's Mancall, isn't it?
Mancall, yes.
Mancall. It's Fatal Journey, The Final Expedition of Henry Hudson, A Tale of Mutiny and Murder in the Arctic, published by Basic Books. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.